Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care. Nahastan anila nijone go shavothya, nijone go shavothya. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Thank you.
from the drum Poundmaker off their Kenyon Records CD entitled Cree Powwow Songs. Those Northern Cree singers are members of the Tootoosis family. That tune was an honoring victory song. Honor songs are performed in recognition of a special action, such as warriors defending the people. Across Indian country, these drum songs often honor a past historic event or ancestor. In contemporary times, a victory honor song may honor a special achievement, such as a school graduation. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices program is Program 3 of Wolf Mountain Radio's series entitled Voices for Justice, Conversations with Youth Activists. One definition of justice from the dictionary is fairness or reasonableness, especially in the way people are treated and how decisions are made. Yad Kiddushi Native Center expands this definition to include our Mother Earth and all life. This concept of treating each other in the biosphere with dignity and respect is the basis of Yad Kiddushi Native Center's mission. It is the central focus of most every Wolf Mountain Radio program. There are many aspects of justice, legally and morally. Many justice issues are interconnected. Examples include cultural, racial, ethnicity, social, religious, gender, age, geographic, professional work status, educational levels, economic, energy, and environmental. Justice issues should also be considered as a universal human right, as well as a right of nature to be protected around the globe. Today's program features Voices for Justice. They are a conversation with youth activists who were willing to share their views on a variety of issues with listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio. These interview topics are as varied as are my program guests. What they all have in common is their sincerity of concern and willingness to try to fight for justice and equality. Voices for Justice, Conversations with Youth Activists, took place during Encuentros in Immokalee, Florida, a poor rural town in southwest Florida near where Yad Kiddushi Native Center is located. Encuentro is a Spanish term for gathering. Every year, Yad Kiddushi Native Center has the privilege to attend a national gathering of young people who are dedicated to standing up for poor people's dignity and human rights. The annual Immokalee Encuentro is hosted by the Student Farm Worker Alliance. SFA is a decentralized network of diverse organizations and individuals working together for justice. The primary focus of SFA is being an ally to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, CIW. Most Wolf Mountain Radio listeners have heard many of our programs about Coalition of Immokalee Workers' efforts to defend themselves from social and economic exploitation by America's agribusiness food industry. The poverty and oppressive working conditions, faced mostly by immigrant labor, who harvest much of the fruits and vegetables Americans eat, is nothing less than modern-day slavery. It is, as journalist Edward R. Murrow's classic documentary film title says, a harvest of shame. The grim reality of agricultural workers in farm fields and in food packing plants is little known by the general public. Abuse of working conditions, payment levels below a fair living wage, exemption from labor rights, lack of safety regulations, police harassment, racism, substandard housing, and serious environmental health problems are the types of injustices occurring in Immokalee and in many other places in America and around the world. These issues are very important to Yad Kiddushi Native Center. because as most long-time listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, I, like many other Native Americans and other indigenous peoples in the world, have been a farm worker. In North America, not too long ago, before immigrant labor, much of the farm work was done by Native Americans. I grew up harvesting blueberries, cranberries, potatoes, apples, and working in horticulture. I remember working long hours for very little money. In those days, racism and lack of respect by the growers was common, as it still is, towards the mostly Central American and Haitian workers who are the predominant labor force. Many of us American Indians were, like present-day workers, exposed to and made sick by agrochemical fertilizers, herbicides, and insecticides. This is one of the reasons why I became a professional ecologist in order to fight against the poisoning of the people, land, and waters. This is a serious example of what many call environmental racism. Yad Kadishi Native Center's support of the Coalition of Mockley Workers since its inception in 1995 has introduced me to many fine people, workers, student activists, community organizers, interfaith clergy, some members of the media, and even a few politicians who have an interest in these issues. Networking with people who care about injustice, especially the many students and young people across the country, gives me encouragement to continue my activism. I hope my conversations with the different program guests you will hear will likewise motivate you to be an activist. The issues, campaigns, protest actions, and achievements of CIW and their SFA allies are well described on both CIW and SFA websites. Ways in which people can get involved and support this justice movement, as well as learning more about the struggle, are urged to visit CIW and SFA's websites, which are www.ciw-online.org and www.sfalliance.org for more information. I also want to remind Wolf Mountain Radio listeners that Yad Kadishi Native Center has produced many Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices radio programs about CIW, agribusiness, and farm worker struggles that can be heard anytime on the internet at www.radioforall.net. While today's program conversations include CIW issues, many of the views expressed by my guests encompass other serious topics: human rights, immigration policy, campaign organizing, greenwashing by corporations and governments, coalition building, environmental justice, and economic globalization as examples. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kadishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My first guest is Mr. Simone Cedillo. Simone is a human rights activist focused on issues in Mexico. I've had the privilege to interview him at previous annual Immokalee Encuentros, which you can hear anytime online with other Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices programs. The Radio for All website is www.radioforall.net. Simone Cedillo has great respect for grassroots justice movements, and he supports Indigenous people's struggles for sovereignty and self-determination. Simone is also a fine independent videographer that has informed people about what is happening in Mexico that you don't see in the mainstream media. Last evening, he screened his film about what is happening in Oaxaca. For the benefit of our worldwide listeners, the southeastern Mexican state of Oaxaca is located along the Pacific Ocean. The name Oaxaca is derived from a native Nahuatl word for a tree that was common to that land. Oaxaca has a mountainous topography. While it is populated by at least 16 various indigenous peoples, there is still much racism and discrimination towards Amerindians by Mexicans of European descent, who are the political and economic elite that rule Oaxaca. The invasion of Spaniards in 1521, as throughout the Americas, has left a strong colonial impact that the national government of Mexico seems to emulate. Like in Chiapas and elsewhere, in Oaxaca, there is a people's resistance movement through groups like APO and MULTI. Yadkinishi Native Center considers the American Indian people's struggles in what is now called Mexico and Mesoamerica and an important part of the worldwide movement of indigenous peoples fight to be who we are as native peoples, as sovereign nations with equal rights as members of the global community. Simone, would you please tell our listeners about your work in Mexico?
Good day, everybody. This is Simon Cedillo. I'm currently working with a new number of collectives in Oaxaca, mostly youth collectives. One of the collectives is doing youth-led caravans into indigenous communities from the city in order to reconnect youth from the city to their traditional roots of resistance in the different indigenous communities in the region. So we're calling this territorial work and calling it regeneration of our consciousness, regeneration of our connection to our native resistance. So that's one collective. Another collective I'm working with is called Mal de Ojo TV. They are basically a collective that came out of the social movement in 2006 that has been documenting resistance, documenting the movement, documenting police brutality, and making videos on their own, like basically Oaxacan folks doing that. So I'm supporting that project. And they do a lot of work also with different groups to do video training in different native communities or youth-led communities, things like that. So working with them a little bit. The third collective out of the four that I'm working with is an urban sustainability technologies project, where it's these youth, like street youth, that have grown up and are proposing alternative technologies for use in indigenous communities and in neighborhoods. And basically the main technology that they've been creating is bicycle run machines, like corn huskers, coffee grinders, water pumps for communities that don't have electricity or don't have the resources to have electric grinders, things like that. It's a really good example of an approach to sustainability, to appropriate sustainable technologies that I haven't seen anywhere else. And again, it's youth-led. They've been working in a specific neighborhood outside of Oaxaca City for 4 years and have begun to participate with us in this territorial work, going into communities and taking the technologies. The fourth and final group I'm working with now is a new human rights organization called Casa Chapulin. They originated in Chiapas and have moved to Oaxaca and are recruiting international observers for 6 month stints in indigenous communities. And what they've asked me to do is to begin to challenge the notion of the international observer and think about how we can begin to contribute to the community's ability to defend its own rights without having this codependency on an international observer, an international agency. With all these different collectives together, basically what we're looking at is how, as outsiders, to actively contribute to self-determination, as outsiders, how to write ourselves out of the script and not create these codependencies that are traditionally revolving around charitable solidarity that we see around the world. Don't really have all the answers, but the questions are very clear, and we're questioning ourselves and trying to challenge that and just pushing that further and further.
Traditional marimba music from a CD entitled Marimba Alma Chapina. The name of that song, performed by Samuel Simone, was Un Son Maya. That beautiful music is often heard in the villages of what is now called Mexico and Guatemala. I remember many special times listening to that traditional music while visiting various native communities as a journalist in 1985. Reporting on the warfare against indigenous peoples in Central America. I'm speaking with human rights social justice activist, Mr. Simon Cedillo, here at an Immokalee Encuentro. My friend, at lunch today, you and I were discussing how some English words have been used so commonly that their true meanings have been weakened. Terms such as peace, struggle, solidarity, equality, and even justice may be mistranslated or misrepresented when outside groups try to speak in behalf of a grassroots community. I've seen this happen with well-meaning Euro-American activists trying to support Native American issues. When this happens, it can create a mindset on the part of those outside activists that only they know what's best for the community they are trying to help, when in actuality, it is the village people who not only know what's best, but also the correct strategy and best ways of doing things for themselves. Sir, would you please comment on this?
More and more, is in particular U.S. activism, is starting to fall into a phenomenon that I call imperial activism. The idea that the activist is going to activate the community and the community doesn't have its own sense of resistance, its own sense of power. So in this is this word, empower, which is about the most condescending approach to solidarity out there, right? Because if you are empowering women or empowering youth of color or empowering the indigenous, that places power in the hands of the activists and negates the power of the community. This type of mentality validates charity and negates true solidarity. So other words out there that are being co-opted, and I mentioned this before, but one of the main words is this notion of sustainability. In the global north, sustainability is an energy efficient car, a recycling program, a compost bucket, a fair trade mochaccino latte. Meanwhile, throughout the global south, sustainability is just one thing: survival. So while sustainability in the North has become this product, this merchandise that is manufactured for a bourgeois political class to feel guilt-free about their comfort, tranquility, and fake peace, what in essence is happening is survival itself is being commodified. And this model, this greenwashing model that we're falling into more and more, if you can afford to survive greenly, well, great. But if you can't afford to survive at all, then too bad. Sustainable technologies are not being created in such a way that they're appropriate to the communities that need them the most in order to survive. So, in essence, we have a laissez-faire weather left in the United States that more and more is neoliberal. They're more neoliberal than the neocons and George Bush and these fascists. These fascists are easy to identify.
We know who they are.
We know who they are, but more and more the left is becoming the legitimizer of neoliberalism, right? And in the end is this, like you said, this notion of peace. Throughout all of this, people have this idea that peace is attainable through these means, but the peace that exists in this country and in global North countries is a false peace. It's a temporary peace, it's a fabricated peace, it's a virtual peace, because as we all know, there can be no peace without dignity, justice, and liberty for everybody, everywhere, all the time. So as long as we perpetuate this false peace, what we do is we perpetuate its means, and its means is terror. This peace is constructed on terror. This peace is constructed upon the back, sweat, and blood of generations and continues to be constructed on that back, sweat, and blood. My question here is what are we willing to sacrifice for everybody to have peace everywhere, have the same amount of peace with dignity and justice? That's what Americans need to start to ask themselves. If you're an American and you're fighting for social justice, how comfortable are you? How tranquil is your life? How peaceful is it? And how much of that are you willing to sacrifice for others to have an equal share of that peace?
Simone, through Wolf Mountain Radio, that has been on the air since 1979, I have tried to inform and educate listeners about many serious issues throughout the world. This journalism work has shown me that the general public often has a short memory and a brief attention span. While I often report on the situations going on in the Global South, I think it's fair to say that many people are not aware of human rights abuses and socioeconomic injustices taking place. Unfortunately, Oaxaca is an example. Would you please provide a brief update on the situation in Oaxaca, perhaps mentioning the status of the infamous Governor Ruiz?
Well, Ruiz is still in technical power, but one of the things I think that is most important to point out about the social movement in Oaxaca is that what happened will never be reversed. The people realized that they could take the city, that they could take the media, that they could take control and distribute power horizontally amongst themselves and effectively make that happen. So now you can never take that away from the people. The people know what it's like to have control of the media, have control of their daily lives, have control of community policing, have control of how food and water gets to them. Now, there's been a lot of traitors in the movement, and it's important to mention this because this is a constant, I think, that we have in all of our resistances. People become traitors for many reasons, out of need, out of fear, out of just sheer economic desire or aspirations. And it's been a potential downfall for the movement in terms of what internationals saw. But the reality is that the movement never was any one organization or any one labor union that sold out. It was always the people. And the people still have that clear. And everybody's just waiting for the next time this is going to pop off again and to really just do it right and not fall into the same traps. And it is. It's going to happen again. It's clear to us that it's going to happen again. It may not be Oaxaca, but there's so many places in Mexico that are on the border of popping off into something uncontrollable for the state that it would spark off something on a national level. Mexico has a revolution every 100 years, 1810, 1910, we're coming out to 2010. The Mayan prophecies talk about a tremendous transformation. The Popol Vuh talks about a tremendous transformation in our world after 2012. Everybody has this very present. The Zapatistas have this very present. The people of Oaxaca and Guerrero have this very present. And it's not a myth. No, this is very real because you can see that the revolution has already begun. Right now, as I sit here and speak to you, there are over 100 businessmen and politicians that have been kidnapped in Mexico at any given moment. Police officers are being assassinated at alarming rates. Uprisings are popping off all over the place. The revolution has already begun. It's just a matter of when people in the Global North are going to notice it or not. It's going to affect them no matter what, whether they notice it or not right now. It's going to affect them no matter what. We're in a full-blown revolution in Mexico right now. And it's just going to grow. It's just going to gain momentum. And we really have the potential to be one of the key dominoes that will fall on top of this neoliberal monster. Just because of our proximity to the United States, just because of the history, just because of our roots, just because of our willingness to die more than the government is willing to kill us.
Simone, I want to thank you for sharing your views with us on Wolf Mountain Radio. It has been great to see you again here at the Immokalee Encuentro. I always like to ask my program guests if they have any final comments.
No, just thank you very much and I appreciate it. You have a good day.
Are you confused by what you see? There's violence on the left and right, still in the center, some look for peace. Their dream is one of beauty, the lion sleeps with the lamb. But those who sleep between them better sleep lightly if they can. No hay centro.
There's no center in this fight.
No hay centro. Amigo.
Only left and right. When a pueblo's hungry, there's no room for compromise. You fight for food and freedom, or join the other side. raging fights. We'll find their side is chosen, but a middle serves the right. No white center.
There's no center in this fight.
No white center, amigo.
People's Singers cassette that was recorded in the 1980s. The name of that song was No Hay Centro. That song reflects the situation at that time in much of what is now called Central America, the region of the world indigenous peoples call Abiala. One of the sad ironies of the violence from that era is that many farm workers today in Immokalee are the children of those who suffered from the wars in Central America, in which the United States was complicit in. The infamous U.S. military's School of the Americas is an example many still protest against. Economic trade agreements, such as NAFTA and CAFTA, have created conditions where many people risk crossing the border to find work in America in order to support their families. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yacht Kedishi Native Center. Today's broadcast is Program 3 of our interview series entitled Voices for Justice, Conversations with Youth Activists at the Immokalee Encuentro. This fourth annual gathering in 2008 brought together many young people from across America in order to support poor people's struggles for dignity and justice, especially the harsh socioeconomic situation of farm workers. The Encuentro is hosted by the Student Farm Worker Alliance, SFA's national network of students and youth work as allies to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, supporting CIW's campaigns against exploitation by agribusiness and the food and restaurant industry. Student Farm Worker Alliance is a true grassroots organization that is dedicated to social and economic justice. I greatly respect SFA because they listen and take direction from the CIW, rather than thinking that only they know what is best for farm workers, or worse, overshadowing community self-empowerment. SFA has accomplished a lot since their formation in the year 2000. Student Farm Worker Alliance has played a major role in CIW's labor victories with Yum Brands, the largest restaurant corporation that controls Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, and KFC. SFA also supported CIW's campaigns against McDonald's and Burger King. This is amazing since the Student Farm Worker Alliance only has a few staffers in Immokalee. One such very fine person and friend of mine is Megan Kohorst, whom I now have the honor to welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Megan, would you please tell our worldwide listeners the purpose of the Encuentro? Why a great group of students and young people are here in Immokalee, Florida.
Thanks, Ernest, and thank you for coming here and being here at the Encuentros for the past 4 years to kind of help us document what has become this kind of annual event here. The first year we had the Encuentro was really based on the idea of bringing people to Immokalee. The SFA network is based all over the country. There's students here from California, from Chicago, from Washington, D.C. So they're all over the country, and many of them have been organizing on CIW stuff for several years. Others are new. So basically, the Encuentro is a space for all of those people to come together, to visit Immokalee, to see firsthand what the conditions are, to meet the farm workers that they're working with in this campaign, to meet with all of the other students who make up the network, and to really provide a space for all of us to come together and strategize and learn together.
Megan, the CAW actions with support from the Student Farm Worker Alliance and assistance from Interfaith Action have shown how grassroots organizing can create change. Would you mention the current and future focus of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers Farm Workers Struggle, such as the discussions here at the Encuentro about Subway and Chipotle fast food restaurants?
Sure. We're here right now. For the past 4 years, we have strategized around campaigns and what has become now the movement for fair food. So now with this most recent victory that we just had against Whole Foods, we're shifting the focus now to Subway, which is going to be our main national focus. Subway is a huge buyer of Florida tomatoes. They have an independent purchasing cooperative that they even state negotiate the lowest prices for purchased goods. So they've already kind of acknowledged their role in keeping prices low as a restaurant that promotes kind of healthy eating choices. People go there. Almost everyone who goes to Subway gets a tomato on their sandwich. So bringing Subway to the table is going to be a huge turning point in this campaign when we're actually able to do it. That's going to be our main national focus. We're here talking about different ways we can deal with Subway in terms of its brand, in terms of whether or not they're on college campuses, in terms of dealing with different aspects of Subway that are different than the other restaurants and other companies that we targeted so far. So that's one angle. And then the other angle, on a more localized angle, is the Chipotle campaign. Chipotle is headquartered in Denver, so we have a very strong campaign or a very strong local group there in Denver that's been putting a lot of pressure on Chipotle for the past 2 years. And basically what we're asking from them is that they make good on what they call food with integrity. That's pretty much their slogan, which in their definition is food that is good for the environment, is good for small farmers, and is good for animals. And we want them to add farm workers into the equation because it's a rational thing to do and it's the right thing to do.
Megan, one very special achievement of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers is their new community center. This building will greatly enhance the important education, justice campaigns, community empowerment, and grassroots leadership work of CIW. SFA and IFA will also have offices in the building. The new community center will provide a safe meeting space as well as classrooms. Another very important part of the community center is a larger food co-op. The local groceries have been able to charge high prices since there has been little choice to shop elsewhere. Last but not least, the new community center also now has a state-of-the-art radio studio broadcasting locally on Radio Consentia 107.9. I am proud to have been able to help develop this community radio. Megan, please talk about the new CIW Community Center.
Basically, the CIW has been working out of the same office for about, I would say, about 10 years now. And it was a small 1.5-room office that basically was the home base for this campaign that became not only national but also international. So there was not only that, but there was also all of the work that the CIW was doing here in the community. The organization was growing, and there really wasn't a lot of space during the community meetings. Every Wednesday, the CIW has community meetings where they talk about basic human rights, they talk about free trade, they talk about all of the different things that make up this movement, what are the forces that are basically oppressing workers here, and just general education. So every Wednesday that happens, and every Wednesday there were people spilling out of the door. People would not come in because they thought, oh, well, it's full. So it's been a long been a dream of the CIW to have a real space of their own, not a rented office, an actual building where we can have community events, where student groups or groups of people of faith come, they can come and be comfortable. And so for actually 4 years ago, we purchased a building here in Immokalee about a block away from our current office. For those 4 years, we've been fundraising, we've been remodeling that building. And just this past July, it was finally completed. We moved in. It's a beautiful new building. There's space now for over 100 workers in the main room. As you mentioned, there's the radio station for Radio Conciencia, which is 107.9. There is a library, a separate space for us allies to have a space for ourselves. And there's also a wonderful new yard that we've been using, especially now with the CIW's women's group. We provide childcare so the women can come and really focus on their group there. So we take the kids outside. It's really wonderful to have a space. And also, the CIW will have events outside. Sometimes in our old office, they would be in the street. We'd have to close off the street. So now we have a yard, we have a parking lot. So it's just a wonderful space here in Immokalee.
An irony of Immokalee is that farm workers, people who harvest much of the food Americans eat, prior to the CIW's community center's food co-op, had to pay exorbitant prices for food, much of which is not healthy and nutritious. The local stores price gouged. Megan, would you please briefly talk about the CIW food co-op, which is run by community members?
Yeah, so the cooperative was started a few years ago, as you mentioned, to deal with these issues of price gouging that were happening here in Immokalee, because the nature of the community is that very few people have access to cars. And so you're basically limited to the stores that are in your walking distance, and those stores know that. So, for example, a bag of maseca, which is cornmeal basically used for tortillas, which is a general staple here in Immokalee, everyone buys maseca. 2-pound bag of maseca was being sold for about $5 here in Immokalee. When our cooperative opened, we started selling that same bag of maseca for $2. And at that point, the stores were forced to lower their prices to deal with that. So it's been a huge asset to the community. We also sell phone cards at or below cost. So it's a really great space.
Megan, my next question relates to the socioeconomic differences in Southwest Florida and how for many poor immigrants in this area, the reality of daily life is far from the public relations image of paradise. In many ways, it reminds me of the former apartheid system of South Africa. Early mornings as the sun dries the dew off the lawns of rich white people's gated communities and country clubs, buses bring Hispanic and Haitians to work as maids or in landscaping in the wealthy Gulf Coast areas of Naples and Bonita. Toward sunset, these brown and black-skinned laborers are bused back the 35 miles to towns such as Immokalee, where living conditions can only be described as extreme poverty. Immokalee still resembles a stereotypical southern white rural town run by a few old-time families in their good old boy agribusiness, which is the political and economic power structure of this part of the county. Farm workers, mostly Latino, Haitian, and Mayan Indians, work long hours in the hot sun, harvesting the fruits and vegetables many Americans eat. The exhaustive hard work is nothing less than modern-day slavery. Abusive crew bosses, uncaring landowners, sub-poverty wages, environmental health problems from exposure to toxic herbicides and pesticides, an exemption from USDA labor laws, other conditions of working the farm fields in Southwest Florida. On top of all this, the country's sheriff department has a long history of racism and abusive police conduct in Immokalee. Very few deputies speak Spanish or Haitian Creole. These are spoken more than English is in Immokalee. Very few of any sheriff deputies live in Immokalee. If law enforcement can't speak the primary languages, and if none reside in town, how can the sheriff department really know and understand the local community? Last but not least, many farm workers are undocumented who live in fear of being deported. Collier County Sheriff's Department was the first police agency in Florida to be given immigration law enforcement authority. This has created great hardships for the mostly immigrant farm worker community. I've lived in this area 20 years. I like Immokalee for its cultural diversity, as well as being a rural area. Many Sundays, I go to the farmer's market. Years ago, I also volunteered as a member of the Immokalee Growth Management Planning Committee to try to protect land and water resources. However, in 2 decades of residing in this area, I've observed much disrespect and discrimination towards poor people of color, like those maids, gardeners, and farm workers that wealthy, predominantly white Americans greatly need to do menial labor. Megan, would you please share any thoughts you have?
I feel personally very privileged to live here in this community of Immokalee. It's a very unique community. It's a very migrant community. During the summer, there's about 15,000 people, so that's the permanent population of Immokalee. And then during the tomato growing season, the orange growing season, from about September until late April, early May, about 20,000 farm workers also move into this space. So it's a very dynamic space. It is largely migrant. It's largely male. There have been several issues with police, crew leaders, bosses exploiting people, and that's the everyday reality of the work here, and that is what the CIW is working to change. The fact of the matter is that, you know, many of the officers that are working in Immokalee, they live in Naples, they're not residents of this community, they have no connection here. They come here and, you know, it's a very difficult situation. And, you know, when you are pulling someone over or if you're interrogating someone and you don't speak their language, that's a huge problem. And it's also not only maybe some of them speak Spanish, but a large majority of the workers here come from indigenous communities. Spanish is their second language, and there's been no effort to address that. It is still a very serious issue.
Megan, I want to sincerely thank you for all the hard work you do in trying to create a better world for everyone. I am very honored that we are friends. I often ask my program guests, especially young people I interview, as a final question, their feelings about the future. We who care about Mother Earth and the well-being of all life are up against strong forces many call globalization. Megan, do you have hope for the future?
Absolutely. I mean, it's really hard to be in a space like this, like the Encuentro, to be surrounded by over 100 youth and allies and farm workers and all of these people who are, basically all of us are working for the same thing. We're all working for a more just economic system. We're working for global justice, essentially. It's extremely difficult to be pessimistic. And I would say that, yes, I'm optimistic that we can make this change, because I know that as large as our network is, as big as it gets, we're not alone. There are the Zapatistas in Mexico, there's the Landless Workers Movement in Brazil, there are all kinds of social movements all over the planet that are working towards the same goal. And so I think that, yes, there's optimism, but at the same time, we have to really be mindful of the fact that we're all working together in solidarity, that we all have to support one another's struggles, because it is only as one body, as one group of conscious individuals, as workers, as students, that's the only way that real change is going to happen.
You are listening to Yatkidichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. I wish to again express my appreciation to Simone Cedillo and Megan Cohorst for being today's Wolf Mountain Radio's program guests. Please visit the Coalition Markley Workers and Student Farm Work Alliance's websites for more information. They are www.ciw-online.org and www.sfalliance.org. Please listen next time for Program 4 of Voices for Justice, Conversations with Youth Activists from the Immokalee and Quentro. Yacht Kiddushi Native Center, host and producer of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, encourages worldwide listeners to get involved in campaigns and actions for justice, however you can and wherever you live. The society we now have and the type of life future generations will inherit depends upon everyone everywhere working together for a better world for all. We shall conclude today's program with a song by Robert Tree Cody and Will Clipman off their Canyon Records CD, Heart of the Wind. The name of the song is The Hunter's Return. Many Native societies used to hunt and fish for food before the lands and waters were polluted. Some tribal communities are still able to do so. Even in my youth, we hunted moose and deer and fished the lakes, rivers, and coastal waters. We perform ceremonies each season to thank our animal, plant, and aquatic relatives for giving their lives for us human beings to live. Hunters and fishermen also offer personal prayers of gratitude. The return of hunters and fishermen would be acknowledged by an honor song, which was meant for the animals and fish, as well as to those who brought food for the village. We had reverence for Mother Earth, only taking what we needed for subsistence. We respected and honored our natural world relatives. Kenan Wontakwisen. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kenan Wontakwisen to all of our relations.